Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
So full of lies, when no word is spoken of why the Indian dies and dies and dies. Well, that the Chicana loves the California land. Do our books all say it was discovered by one white man? Well, that's just a lie, one of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Oh, why are the weapons of the war so young? And why are there only rich ones around when it's done? Why are so many of the soldiers black or brown? Do we think it's because they're good at cutting other people down? Well, that's still alive. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Nazi forces grow again. Ignorance gives them a place. The Klan is teaching children to hate the human race. Where once there was a playground, now an MX missile plant. Do they think it's fun and games to see just how much we can stand? People die around the world from starvation and grief all the time. Some folks try to avoid the truth by saying God and gun will provide. In Rome, in Cape Town, in Beirut, San Salvador, Greensboro, Belfast, Manila, and many more. It's a crime. Do we think the fascist right will save the world in time? They try to tell us all. We've got to tell them no. It's all a lie. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide. No, 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 no. No more genocide. No, no. No more genocide in our name.
Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, broadcast here on Global Community Radio Station, Radio for Peace International. That song was entitled No More Genocide in My Name, from the classic tune from singer-songwriter Holly Near. We featured that song as an honor to today's program guest, Holly Rowan. That song for peace and justice exemplifies the spirit of my friend who is here in the studio. Holly has devoted her life to peace, to human rights, and social justice. She is a strong defender of the environment. As a professional nurse and midwife, Holly is well respected in the field of health and women's rights. She has been a peace warrior on the front lines for many, many years. Some of our worldwide listeners may know about Holly from her 1980s anti-war activism against United States intervention in what's now called Central America. In 1987, while protesting at the U.S. Naval Weapons infamous facility, Port Chicago, her ex-husband Brian Wilson lost his legs when he was run over by a military weapons supply train at that California base. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in the 1980s, I also was deeply involved against the U.S. war in Central America and helped co-sponsor one of the first Mayan Indians to be granted sanctuary by a Native American tribal nation. I was a journalist covering the war in Abiyala, the indigenous name of this region more commonly called Central America. At that time, I had the honor to visit a number of indigenous communities in each Central American country, until a brutal situation against Mayan Indians in Guatemala, which I exposed, got me expelled from the region. Upon my return to the U.S., I did hear about what happened to Brian, and so I am indeed privileged to now be friends with our dear sister, Holly. I am very, very honored to call her my friend. She is a sister in what I term the Earth Justice Movement, the worldwide grassroots intercultural movement to fight against globalization and fight for the well-being of all life on Mother Earth. This is at the heart of what we here at Yat Kitishi Native Center is also dedicated to. I met Holly at a 2003 Earth Charter Forum that I spoke at. I knew then that we would become friends and would work together in future community actions for Earth justice. This past year, the Great Spirit gifted us an opportunity to come together with other fine community activists to form the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television. Our TV program entitled Interconnections serves to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about important issues of our times. The vision and mission of our TV coalition is very, very special. I wish to read some excerpts from our brochure and websites, since these statements very well express a philosophy that I know Holly and us here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center believe in. The mission statement of Interconnections. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television believes that many of the complex and diverse problems facing the world today stem from our mistreatment of one another and of our planet. These problems can be resolved peacefully and ethically with informed and democratic decision-making. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will remind viewers that the world consists of one people sharing common goals, to live in peace with one another and to care for our planet and our young. War and violence are not valid solutions to the problems facing humanity. All of life is interconnected. Peace is the answer. Realizing this interconnectedness of all living creatures is the way. Our vision statement reads, the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television is concerned about the direction our society has been moving. We believe it is time to move in a different direction. Life on Earth is at a critical point. Our future and our planet's well-being depend upon what type of society we humans choose to create. Our coalition is concerned about cultural, environmental, social justice, economic, health, and peace issues. Interconnections will highlight these and other themes while providing local, national, and international perspectives. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television serves as a voice for those not often heard. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will also provide you with the news and information you need to make a difference. The coalition also wants to hear from you. Please send us your comments and suggestions. And finally, the goals of the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television are to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about the important issues of our time, to motivate people to work for change, to provide a public forum for progressive voices, for change to be heard in our community. Well, dear friends, there are many other highlights I could mention as an introduction to our special guest, Holly, here, but I will defer to Holly to tell us more about herself and some of the wonderful things that has been a part of her life. Let me just reiterate that we of Yad Kiddushi Native Center are honored to share friendship and the important work of Earth Justice with her. Please listen now to Program 4 of our interview with peace and anti-globalization activist Holly Rowan. Our conversation continues where we left off in Program 3 as we were talking about the Free Trade of America's protest in Miami. And as we listen, you'll begin to hear my brief comment of how I, as a journalist, tried to attend that protest, covering it as a journalist, but was turned away by the police before we could get to downtown Miami. I know what you have just shared with our audience, Holly, is in fact true. I was a credentialed journalist, and I was on my way there, and I was turned away, so I didn't actually get to cover the protest. I had other colleagues of mine that I've talked to and have interviewed, and our listeners have heard these reports where even those of us, quote, journalists, unquote, who were well-credentialed, were well-identified, had our so-called Miami Police Department press ID in clear view, where I won't even use the word roughed up. I've been roughed up before. We're assaulted as media. And the police chief there, I know, has been brought before some city hearing on, I would use the term, police misconduct. I observed that on television, those hearings, and they were just a joke from my vantage point. I know you were there in the audience. Can you briefly mention a little bit about what I think was a circus in terms of how the chief of police and his staff were able to basically lie and mislead the American public and the city officials about what really was police misconduct.
Yes, I was there, I think, at the hearing you're talking about, and one beforehand, too, that the AFL-CIO and the American Civil Liberties Union also had. This was the CIP, the Civilian Investigative Panel, and I was there with a couple of friends, my partner Liz here, and also another woman who was shot in the head, in the back, and all over her body by rubber bullets and was badly wounded, and we held up pictures that said, "Why did you shoot me?" And photographs of our wounds, which were and are terrible. The meeting was awful. It was an absolute travesty. The report that came out, it was the report when it came out itself, and it was thousands of pages of long, and it was only released the night before so that nobody could examine them or read them or respond to them beforehand. The people that were wounded and arrested unjustly were not allowed to speak. Some of us were led out of the room. I actually left the room at some point because I just got too angry to be there, and I wanted to behave myself. But one of the horrible things that they did in that meeting was in the introduction, there was a very, very highly edited and produced video that was shown, and it was shown of probably some of their actors, of violent anarchists, so-called violent anarchists, with many piercings and tattoos all over them and scary-looking guys, you know. And I know a lot of people who look like that, and they're not scary anyway. That's beside the point. But the whole point of that video was total propaganda to demonize political activists and peace activists and justice activists that were coming to the city and that ended up being there. They kept flashing the camera back after every few statements about what a good job the Miami police and the allied forces that were with them, what a good job they did at crowd control. They completely minimalized all the complaints, those that actually did send in written complaints. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the people that were arrested and that were wounded didn't submit their stories to that because it would possibly hurt their civil cases in the future. It was going to work against them, which was really unfortunate. But the entire report was a complete travesty. There's no justice there, and the CIP, the Civilian Investigative Panel, is a joke. They're a bunch of clowns, as you would say.
Oh, that a number of people that were seriously hurt and wounded were what you might call everyday citizens. Yeah, Miami, for those of you who are international listeners, might not know that much of South Florida, Miami Beach in particular, have a large number of geriatric people, what in English is called elderly people. As I said, I talked to a number of my colleagues, journalists, who were able to get beyond the police blockade of our journalists, and many of the people who were observing the, I guess you'd call it protests or the rally, were residents of Miami, many elderly who were just on the sidewalk watching the, I'd call it proceedings, and they were very much brutalized, and mothers with young children and pregnant women who were not, quote, protesters. You know, I'm not always saying that all protesters are peaceful. There are folks who do plan to do some serious action there and wear helmets and have, you know, well-trained. I don't mean it that way in a negative sense. But, you know, there are some people who really work at voicing their opinions as protesters and do nonviolence training and get well-prepared and sometimes are willing to suffer the consequences of police brutality, and I don't think that's right. But the point I'm making is a lot of people who were hurt were not protesters and were just average citizens out on the street watching, and that's a very important point that I wanted to raise. I also wanted to ask you, while we're on this subject, this is certainly of no surprise to people in different movements over the years, but especially, for example, with the Native American sovereignty movement, some of our problems have been people employed by the FBI and by the so-called police authorities, dressing up as so-called native people, so-called protesters, but are really troublemakers and instigators. In fact, not to get too involved with this subject, I will mention that going back to the time in the 1970s when the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs building was, quote, taken over, and there's a lot of reasons why that was done, and I won't get into it, but what I will say is that the damage that was done to the building was done not by the traditional native people, but was done by actually white people under the employment of the FBI who snuck in as part of the so-called Indian occupation, and they are the ones who destroyed a lot of the cabinets and documents and instigated really a lot of the problems, because I remember having been there, specifically elders and also the leadership of the American Indian movement in particular, giving very specific instructions to all of us. I was a young teenager at the time, not to destroy or deface or damage the so-called Bureau of Indian Affairs building, although I think that would have been a good idea, but we did not. Those who did, what I'm saying, were actually federal agents or those working for the feds under disguise to discredit the American Indian movement. And I would imagine that there have been many examples in many so-called protests where those who have done a lot of the damage are, in fact, if you might say, direct paid informants or employees of FBI or police agencies. Have you had any experience or thoughts on this?
Oh, yes. I certainly know what you're talking about. In Miami, I remember this one man, when the police line was forming, kept coming up to me and other people and saying, I really think you should go get in that policeman's face. I really think you should go in front of the line and tell them that they're pigs. Right? I really think you should start throwing things. So this was a man that wasn't willing to throw things himself, but wanted to try and instigate other people to do that. When I was in New York at the Republican National Convention, after about 1,700 people were arrested on the 31st of August, I was doing jail solidarity and support. And part of the time I was in front of the jailhouse where people were brought, which is another story from Pier 57, where they were illegally detained. As people were coming out of the jail, their supporters were there and cheered them on and welcomed them, and we had medics there and people there to feed them and legal people there for them to talk to as their support. And there was quite a crowd that had gathered, and there was a line of police in front of us. And the police were being very decent. And overall, they were pretty good in New York. But there was this man, and I recognized him. I recognized him, I think, from Miami. And other people told me that they recognized him from the Democratic National Convention. He came out with this big, huge sign that said, F-U-C-K, the police. And then on the other side of the sign, it said, the New York police are pigs. Well, people love the New York police in a lot of ways, especially after 9-1-1. They've become heroes. A lot of the protesters have, I won't say a lot of respect for the police, but at least
some respect.
Exactly. And all of us, those in my cluster and in our whole block, the Green Block and the Orange Block, which is a group of an environmental activists from California, we see the police as ourselves, as our brothers and sisters. And we try to see the humanity in everybody first, not as our enemy. Now, we know they might club us or arrest us, and some people will risk arrest. So it's part, that's part of the game, so to speak. It's a serious game, but we try and keep our attitude of humanity in it. But that, this is a perfect, perfect example of that kind of person you're talking about, a provocateur. And I certainly used to see it in the 80s in the streets of San Francisco at a lot of our street protests we were at. And not just in the protests, but in our meetings and our organizing meetings, there would be people there that would try and create suspicion and distrust among ourselves. They would try and bog down the planning and the decision-making and the consensus process with a lot of anger. They would try to get us to do violent acts. They would try, they would say they were socialists or anarchists or whatever ist is the popular, you know, phrase in the moment, and instead want to make Molotov cocktails, for example, and throw them in San Francisco or light garbage cans. And time after time, the people that I've seen that have done that, I can bet you they work for the government. They're not where the majority of the people are coming from at all. And so we want to make our voices heard in a nonviolent way. And except for a couple of people like anti-nuclear people that I know that are very nonviolent, that call themselves like they do certain acts where they might destroy property, they do it with a lot of reflection and thoughtfulness beforehand. And it's rare. It's far. It's few and far behind. So the destruction of property and violence against the officers is not something that is part of the movement that I know. It's something that provocateurs and instigators are up to.
Thank you, Holly. I believe there was a famous case recently this year, either the year 2004 that we're speaking, or perhaps last year, 2003, of a peace group in Middle America that was very much concerned about U.S. policy in Afghanistan and Iraq. You might know more about this than I, but it actually made one of the national TV news journal segments, whether it was 60 Minutes or 2020 or Frontline. Actually, I think it was Bill Moyers' program now. And I was very happy to see the broadcast where it showed that there were two members of this organization that were actually members of the either state police or county or town police that went, quote, undercover and was basically reporting on middle Americans who were just meeting, voicing their concern peacefully and civically against U.S. foreign policy in the war in Iraq. Do you know about that case?
I'm not sure. I think it might be the same case. There's a little bit of a segment of it that was in Michael Moore's movie. There was an anti-war group against the war in Iraq, and I think they were in Northern California somewhere. And they show them, like, passing around cookies, yes, you know, sharing cookies. Uh-huh. And that group was infiltrated, definitely, and investigated as a terrorist group. You know, I've just assumed since the 60s, quite honestly, I've assumed that in any kind of organizing I'm involved in, and any kind of political action, as soon as it becomes known to the general public that we're going to be infiltrated. And so that's why a commitment to nonviolence is a very good and important thing, because if we're committed to nonviolence and we have nothing to hide, they can infiltrate us, but if we stay in our hearts, if we stay in our hearts and we stay true to the spirit, then we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay, and screw them. Let them learn, maybe. And that's why I do think it is really a good idea to start off our meetings, our organizing, our radio shows, whatever, with a bit of a prayer, with a bit of a rededication of ourselves to the real reasons why we're doing the work that we're doing. You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
In our studio today, I have the pleasure of two very fine people visiting. One of our guests, you've heard some, her name is Holly Rowan, and she is an earth warrior, as I'd like to say, someone who's been long time involved with peace and social justice, human rights, concern for Mother Earth, or in English called the environment, and of course, U.S. foreign policy. And I joke when I use that term because I look at foreign policy as right old here in North America, right down the road, and I consider the United States foreign and militarily occupying traditional Native lands. And we're going to talk a little bit about Iraq, maybe Afghanistan, and generally speaking, U.S. foreign policy. And it's very important because obviously with the clown in the White House, George Bush, and the other clown, Dick Cheney, it is a major concern to everyone who has a brain, and obviously Native people are very concerned about that. But I have to be honest and say that sometimes I'm a little bothered when I talk to American people and they talk about foreign policy in Iraq, and they really don't even have a clue that there's a war going on right here in what's now called North America, and has been going on for more than 500 years. And there were many cases of abuse and occupation by U.S. government on Native lands. But that's for another chapter. So I'm going to just say hello and thank you for being here. And would you share your thoughts about U.S. foreign policy and this absurd militarization that Bush and company have been doing? Of course, I see it as a matter of the colonialism expansion for energy and natural resources, especially oil. All you got to do is look at Halliburton and Cheney, for example. And that's about all I'll say right now and ask my friend Holly here to share any of her thoughts.
You pretty much said it all right now when you mentioned U.S. imperialism, oil, and Halliburton. At Bechtel Industries. Okay, it goes back to that octopus of corporate greed. The war in Iraq is so heartbreaking and so completely insane, immoral, illegal. It's against all international treaties that we've ever signed. It's against international law. It's against the world court. And it's certainly gone against what the United Nations has wanted to agree to. I don't know what it's going to take to get the people of America to wake up and say, stop this insanity. We've had over 1,000 now of our U.S. troops that we know about, and that's just in the U.S. military, that have been killed. What about at the at least 37,000 Iraqi citizens and military, mostly citizens, that have been slaughtered in this war since the beginning of it? And the arrogance of President Bush to say that we have defeated him. We've defeated and the war is over. And that was when we were, what, at about less than 500 of our soldiers. So, but it shouldn't even be about how many of our dead do we have to put up with? How many of our sons and daughters are we going to allow to be sent over there brainwashed, militarized, and put on the front lines and sacrifice for the American dollar? So it's truly heartbreaking. And to do it, to use the tragedy of 9/11, whatever it is that really was behind that story, as an excuse to attack Afghanistan, to go into Iraq, and possibly into Syria next, and wherever else it is that we're going to spread our iron fist, is just absolutely and completely insane to me. And it's heartbreaking. And so I'm really glad to see that there is more of a peace movement. There is more every week, every month of this year. There are more people that are having to open up their minds, their eyes and their mouths too, and say, no, not in my name, we can't do this. And there's so many good people, for example, that have been a part of the National Guard, and for whatever reasons they've joined that. They were not signing on to war. They were not agreeing to that. I was reading in the newspaper today about Bush's campaign against Kerry and Kerry's campaign against Bush. And both of them were saying in the paper today that if the other one was elected, that means we're going to have a draft. Well, that means that they've agreed that we're going to have a draft no matter what. And we've been seeing this and saying this for a while. And I believe by next spring in 05, we're going to have a military draft. And so maybe that's what it's going to take, I don't know, for us to say, no, we can't have this war. And it's what's really horrible about it, this whole threat of terrorism, the fear that citizens of the whole world, but citizens of the United States live in, that it's being pushed down our throat. Part of that fear is becoming something that is real. And the reason why it's real is because the more that we raise our ugly military and trample on the rights and the lands and the governments of people in their sovereign countries, then the angrier they're going to get at us. And it's what we call blowback. That's what 911 was blowback. It's like retaliation. So we had an opportunity after 911. We had an opportunity with the possible friendship and the sympathy of the peoples and the governments of other countries to do some real peacemaking. And we totally blew that opportunity. Instead, we turned around and bombed Afghanistan. And the next thing we did was we somehow connected Al-Qaeda with Saddam Hussein. And the ridiculous and ongoing search for weapons of mass destruction, when we continue to produce weapons of mass destruction here, what right do we have? What right do we have as a nation and as a people and as a government to lay down the law for the rest of the world when we ourselves are the biggest producers of weapons of mass destruction? And so this, obviously I'm very passionate about this subject. I think all war is insane. I really understand when civil wars do arise in a country, when there's an oppressive government or there's a dictator and the people find it necessary to take up arms. But I say, let them do it then. You know, who are we to say whose side is right? Who are we to govern the world with our agenda? Because our agenda is the corporations. Our agenda is profit. Our agenda is taking and using the world's natural resources. And we have no right to do that. We have absolutely no right to do that. And Iraq was a sovereign nation, and they had their own problems. But you know what? What if we took all that money and that industry and we rebuilt our own country here? What if we took care of our own people for health care, for education, you know, for our firemen and women, for sustainable energy here, because it's really possible. I mean, obviously we cannot continue to depend on oil as our main source of energy for transportation and for light and for electricity. We cannot anymore, and there are other alternatives, and there's a way that we could even make them productive. We can make money. Okay, so we could capitalize, if you will, on wind and solar power, for example. There are other ways that we can live our life, and we could make it profitable, but we need to beat these swords into plowshares in order to do that. We have to stop weapons production. And we can't even rebuild our homes here in Florida after all the hurricanes that have devastated us, because all the steel and all the building supplies have gone over to Iraq to so-called rebuild that country. So the whole thing is a really, really vicious, vicious circle of greed and the wrong use of our natural resources. And that it really is what it comes down to. I think it comes down to oil and to production and to profit. And as long as we have profit be the priority instead of people, then we're in trouble and the earth is doomed. And we need to reverse that somehow.
We'd like to let our international audience know that I remember going back in the early 70s with the first Earth Day, when a lot of people were advocating alternative energy, renewable energy, clean technologies like solar energy, geothermal power, wind energy, and many of the people were portrayed as kooks or as crazy hippies on the fringe, although there were a lot of very fine scientists that understood this very well. Someone like my friends Amory and Hunter Lovins, for example, and their soft energy paths, and brother David Brower, who was founder of Friends of the Earth, who was another mentor to me, and I could list others, Barry Commoner also. A lot of these fine PhD folks, you know, really were advocating sanity with respect to how to live on Mother Earth in a good way, especially on energy. As many listeners know, it's really been the multinational corporations that really have prevented the widespread application of a lot of these very beneficial ways of generating electricity. And of course, they've purchased a lot of the patents, so that a lot of solar technologies are really owned by multinational energy companies. I don't use the word oil companies anymore because it's beyond hydrocarbons, but I wanted to mention that as a thought, because it's within a lot of Native American tribal governments in North America. We are the ones on the forefront of renewable energy development, and I'm very happy to say that many of the money that's been raised from gaming, from gambling, bingo, casinos, have gone into other enterprises, tribal enterprises, and Native Americans are on the leading edge of not only developing within our own Native communities alternative energy sources that are minimally polluting and beneficial for the earth, but are also in the technology of sharing that with people in other parts of the world. And I just wanted to mention that because many of us traditional Native American people have no love or wish to support the war in Iraq. I also would like to mention to our worldwide audience that I'm by no means very knowledgeable on the culture history of the Arab and Muslim world or the Middle and Near East and North Africa. And it's a very complicated situation, I'm sure. I think it's very important to reiterate that many of these issues are a direct result of colonialism in the form of governments like the United States and Western Europe supporting dictatorships. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, I think, exemplifies that. And until Americans wake up to the fact that the majority of people in the world who live in poverty, who suffer from hunger and malnutrition, who have a daily struggle to have fresh, clean water, until there is peace and justice and security in the world where all people live in a healthy and safe, equitable society, there's always going to be, quote, conflict. And I see national security not as building some of these crazy outer space weapons that the Reagan started with Star Wars and is being continued with President Bush and his new umbrella plan there with rockets into space. I see world peace and security and homeland security as making sure that everyone in the world is well respected and taken care of. So I just wanted to mention that.
Some say
survive. The new warriors are here to heal the earth and make the water pure. The justice hunters know that a storm is about to rage. The justice hunters know some say only the rocks will survive, but we all pray, we all pray, we all pray, we all pray that justice for all is on the way. Yeah.
From Native American singer-songwriter, our Anishinaabe sister Annie Humphrey, from her Makoche music and CD, Edge of America. That very beautiful song was entitled Justice Hunters. And earlier in our program, we heard a very beautiful honoring song to Mother Earth from Aborigines and what's now called Australia. This particular dance theater band is entitled Nukul Kunjal, and my spirit wife and co-producer of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, Betty, was recently visiting different Aboriginal communities in what's now called Australia, and she met this fine dance theater, and they do a lot of cultural education programs and gifted us this very beautiful CD. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio on Honoring Mother Earth's Indigenous Voices broadcast with Global Community Radio Station, Radio for Peace International. I really sincerely want to thank our guest, Holly Rowan. This has been a very wonderful conversation with her on a range of very important Earth Justice subjects, and I'm very glad, Holly, that we are friends. Well, we're going to conclude with a very fine classic song from my sister, Buffy St. Marie. Most of our worldwide listeners need little introduction to this fine Native woman. She certainly is a hero to us here at Yat Kitishi Native Center, a very fine musician, singer, songwriter, artist, activist, and educator. And this is from her Coincidence and Likely Stories CD. This is the classic Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio program, this is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker, thanking you for listening and wishing you well. Aho, Kinamuntakusin to all of our relations.
In legislations on the desk of a do-right congressman. Now he don't know much about the issue, so he picks up the phone and he asks advice of the senator out in Indian country. And darling of the energy companies who are ripping off what's left of the reservations. I learned a safety rope. I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They'll send in federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart, it won't let me. Deep in the earth, cover me with pretty lies. Bury my heart, it won't let me. Companies who want the land, and they've got churches by the dozens want to guide our hand and sign our Mother Earth over to pollution, war, and greed.
Get this quick!
Bury my heart and won't let me.
Bury my heart and won't let me.
Deep in the earth.
Hello, everyone. This is Yad Kiddush Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio's host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. I want to take this time to let all of our worldwide listeners know about our website. If you want to learn more about the programs and projects of the Yad Kiddush Native Center and Wolf Mountain Native Radio, please look at www.yadkiddushi.org. Once again, Yad Kiddush Native Center's website, www.yatkitishehe.org. And as always, we welcome our listeners to email us with your questions, comments, and suggestions. Our email is yatkitishehe@earthlink.net. That's yatkitishehe@earthlink.net. In addition to our award-winning Wolf Mountain Native Radio, Yad Kiddush Native Centers has a number of important programs and projects. In brief, they consist of the Galuska Nawach Navi Speakers Bureau, the Mishkunateki Native Forums, the Usnagamu Environment Program, the Wakachobi Earth Charter Project, the Ganili Goa Program, and Kinawantakusin Native Arts. These programs and projects of Yad Kiddush Native Center is based on our concern for protecting sacred Mother Earth and promoting the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. So please feel free to contact us. Let us know what you think about our programs. And if you'd like to invite Yad Kiddush Native Center, some of our programs and projects that I mentioned are described. For example, the Galuska Nawach Navi Speakers Bureau. Galuska Nawach Navi is a talking stick or talking feather used by native spokespeople. Speaking with the Galuska Nawach Navi reminds both the speaker and audience to have respect for each other and to listen carefully without judgment. Yad Kiddush Native Center undertakes many school, conference, and community presentations all across North America. Our Mishkunateki Native Forum refers to the Red Earth peoples or indigenous peoples. Yad Kiddush Native Center is experienced in planning conferences, symposiums, powwows, cultural events, concerts, and a variety of multicultural forums. We can help you with your program. Yad Kiddush's Usnagamu Environment Program. Usnagamu is a primary concern of indigenous peoples throughout the world. That is, protecting Mother Earth, defending Mother Earth by fighting energy, environment, and natural resource issues around the globe. Many of our programs on Wolf Mountain Native Radio are the result of our investigative documentary reports. We are proud to be active in both the international environmental justice movement and the anti-globalization peace movement. Yad Kiddush Native Center hosts the Wakachobi Earth Charter Project. Wakachobi Earth Charter Project is an environmental ethic and earth ethics educational program. It is based on caring for the earth and having reverence for all life. Our Wakachobi Project promotes the Earth Charter's values and principles for a sustainable future. This philosophy follows the indigenous people's ethic of being concerned for future generations of all life. Wakachobi, the great blue heron marsh bird, represents the native ethic of peace. Our Wakachobi Project is based on environmental and earth ethics, education, communication, and action. And please request our project brochure for more information on this program. Yad Kiddush Native Center is host of the Ganili Goa program. That's peace, social justice, and native rights. Our peace education and conflict mediation training, as well as monitoring social justice and human rights issues, is a major focus of our center. Yad Kiddush Native Center supports indigenous people's sovereignty and self-determination. And finally, Yad Kiddush's Kinawantakusin Native Arts, our gallery and custom quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts and crafts. Please refer to our descriptive pamphlet, which is available by request, about our beautiful pottery, flutes, jewelry, beadwork, leather pouches, and dream catchers handcrafted by Native artists associated with Yad Kiddush Native Center. Once again, our address is Yad Kiddush Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120 USA, email yachtkiddushi@earthlink.net, and our website www.yachtkiddushi.org. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kanawha Talk Wasin to all of our relations.